Good morning, and thank you for joining us. I'm Twanda Black. You know what? I don't know if you've ever talked to a person that does forensic accounting, but you're about to hear a conversation. Bernadette L. Harris joins us this morning. She's a forensic accountant, and she's going to tell us about what she does. And she's written a book called Did You Hire a Fraud? Oh, my goodness. How much fraud is going around right now? It's just unbelievable. Good morning to you, Bernadette.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and then tell us about what a forensic accountant does.
Right. So I'm a tax and forensic accountant.
Okay.
But today we're going to talk about the forensic part. And mm-hmm. I have been working with business owners for the last 16 years, basically helping them start their businesses right, protect their businesses, and to grow their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So as a forensic accountant, forensic accounting is a very specialized field of accounting, and kind of think of it like CSI with numbers. And so we investigate financial crimes. We provide litigation support. Sometimes it's not a criminal nature. So sometimes there are cases where there's a divorce,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to determine
the value
of the assets or the property.
And somebody's hiding stuff, right?
Yeah, so, you know, I've done cases like that child support where one parent is trying to get the child support modified and they're saying that they made less money. And so the forensic piece, I go in to make sure that what they say is really true. So just kind of determine if people are actually cooking the books.
Mm-hmm.
Or if what they say is really what it is. So.
And you know what? I know a company that had three sets of books. And I said, oh, my God, they're going to get a forensic person in here and you're going down.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that's exactly what happened?
Yeah.
That's exactly. Because I said you can't juggle three sets of books and they all say something different. And I said, do you even know what's true?
Right. Right. I can't even imagine that. Like, as you're saying that, my skin is crawling like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, but it's so much of that out there today. You hear so much about it. In this day, in this environment of greed and dishonesty, I mean, it's always been there, but we're hearing more and more about it today.
Mm-hmm. And I think technology has just accelerated mm-hmm. things that have been happening for years and years. Fraud is one of the oldest crimes, so it's not new. It's just some of the tactics, some of the schemes
mm-hmm.
might be a little new, and then technology just kind of puts us in a position to where people can steal from you a lot easier.
Yeah.
Thanks to technology.
It's crazy. Now, there is an association for you guys, right?
Right. So there is it's called the Association of Certified Fraud Examiner, ACFE.
Mm-hmm.
It's a global organization. So there are probably about 18,000 of us.
Wow.
But we're not all accountants. So mm-hmm. everyone in the association, they're not all accountants. Some of them are accountants. Some of them are investigators. There are people, it's a very interdisciplinary field because
mm-hmm.
we have, like, even when I did my master's program, there were people in the medical field that were getting the same master's degree. And so it's very diverse
mm-hmm.
because they need us all. You know, there are some of us that are the accountants and we can examine the numbers, but then there are the people who are the investigators who maybe ask the right questions and they can
look beyond that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
be able mm-hmm. to get confessions and get people to confess. Like, that's not what I do. I don't want to do that part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it takes a whole lot of different types of people to make up the organization. So I enjoy going to the events because even though we have that commonality, we're all fraud fighters, we all have different ways that we do that.
So what makes a person commit fraud in that sense of hiding or whatever they're doing? What really makes a person, because that's always my question, I wonder what was going on in their life to make them do that?
Yeah, you know, and it really is most fraudsters are first-time offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And so they commit this fraud the first time. They're not quote-unquote bad people. So sometimes it's just that they may be in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have what's called a fraud triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And the fraud triangle says that if a person is under pressure, that's one side of the triangle, and that pressure is usually they have a financial problem, that maybe they're not comfortable sharing, and they don't see how they can solve this problem through legitimate means.
Mm.
That pressure may put them in a situation where they may consider fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so interesting. I was thinking about this the other day when I was getting my master's degree, and I have a master's in fraud and forensics, and one of the courses that I took, we had to, there was an assignment that was called I Am the Criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to write a paper talking about a fraud that we committed,
mm-hmm.
and how we committed it and why and all this other stuff. And I struggled. So, you know, and I'm A type, overachiever, like I have to get an A on everything. And so I'm like, oh my goodness, how am I going to write a paper
mm-hmm.
about committing a fraud? I would never do this. Like, I just don't even look good in orange, you know? And but after getting through the, oh my gosh, so many times, I ended up finally writing the paper. But I realized later the point of it was to understand that anybody
yeah.
could be in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, anybody could be in a situation where they're feeling pressure that, and they don't know how they're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the second part of the triangle is the rationalization piece. And this is the piece where they kind of rationalize that, you know, I'm not a criminal. I've just fallen on bad times
mm-hmm.
or worse, they get even indignant and say, well, they don't pay me enough anyway, or they don't appreciate me, or I'm going to pay it back. I just need to borrow it now and get out of it. So they rationalize
yes.
Their actions for committing the crime.
But you know what? I have an example of that. I was at a church, and the treasurer of the church, who actually, you know, took the money and took it to the bank and everything, she was borrowing. Now I'm doing quotes
mm-hmm.
over here.
Air quotes, right?
She was borrowing the cash money and putting it back. So when I found out about it, I was like, excuse me, what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but I was putting it back. Excuse me, what?
Right.
You're borrowing? You're stealing.
Right.
You're stealing, really? You're stealing.
And that's the rationalization piece.
I was
it's
crazy.
Like they've convinced themselves that
it's okay.
They have a justification
yeah.
for what it is that they're doing.
Oh, my gosh.
Know?
Oh, my God. I was like, never will I ever put cash in here again. I mean, that was a long time ago, this little church I was in. I was like, mm-mm. No, sister, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And unfortunately,
mm-mm.
I've investigated frauds at churches.
I know you have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a good thing. And churches typically they're very trusting because of their
yes.
religious beliefs.
Yes.
And so they don't always have the right controls in place. Mm. They trust too many people.
Right.
Yeah, that's another show.
That's a whole nother thing, right?
So the third part of the triangle is the opportunity part. And
mm-hmm.
this is the part that I teach business owners, because this is the part as a business owner, as an organization, as a pastor, as a leader of a nonprofit or a group, this is the part that you can control.
Yeah.
Because the opportunity is when they discover a way that they can commit fraud
mm-hmm.
in your organization.
Mm-hmm.
When they figure out, oh, they're not paying attention to this.
Right.
This is how I can take it out. And so this is the piece that business owners have to pay attention to make sure that they aren't giving your employees the opportunity. Because you have
Oof.
No control over the pressure.
That's right.
You have no control over their rationalization,
Mm-mm.
but you can control the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Just like they were saying on the news this morning, and this is just a product, but that this Amazon driver had stolen all the packages that he was supposed to be delivering. They found all the boxes and he did lifted out all. And so he had the opportunity. And I know Amazon probably did all the right stuff, all the background checks, all of this, that. And he still, there was the opportunity and he stole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they figure out, you know, like usually in these cases, a fraudster is just like the person that's casing your house to break in.
Mm.
They're paying attention. They're looking to see, like, are they paying attention to this? Oh, and then sometimes they test the waters.
Yeah.
And so they may test the waters and see if they can get away with it. You know how it is. Like, I'm a mom, so I can remember being when my daughter was young. She would try something and see if she got away with it, and if she got
she'd
away with it,
push it a little bit farther.
Before, you know,
right.
So it's no different there,
yeah.
And so as business owners or organization leaders, you have to be diligent and pay attention to things.
So how do we control the opportunity part? Because like you said, that's something we can control. So how do you control the opportunity part of that triangle?
So one of the things that I do is education. So I like to teach people some of the things that you want to do to make sure that you don't. So I have an acronym. It's called TRUST.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first letter in TRUST is T. And the T stands for time off. You have to make sure that your employees are taking time off. You know, sometimes we want to think of a person that's always at work, coming in late, early, staying late, as being dedicated, but everybody needs time off. And here's the thing. What organizations need to understand, if it's your organization, you're totally committed to it and you take time off, why would someone who does not have the same vested interest as you be so committed to you? So when you have an employee who never takes any time off, this might not be dedication. It may be a red flag. So I don't know if you recently heard about this case. There's a case called the fajita fraud. And if you haven't heard it, just Google it. It's not hilarious in a good way. But this guy was working, I think it was a prison, and he was in charge of ordering the food for the prison. So he was ordering fajita meat on the prison dime. And when the delivery came, he received the delivery, put it in his truck, took it home, and he was selling fajitas on the side.
Oh, no.
And so he's selling fajitas, and the prison is funding his business, basically. Well, one day he was sick, and the fajita meat got delivered. And they're like, we don't serve fajitas
at
the
prison. Oh, my God.
And so this is when the fraud was discovered, when he was off. And so a fraudster has to commit their crime in private. So that's why they're always there, because if they don't come to work, something like the fajita guy happens because somebody steps into your position in your absence.
Right.
So time off. R stands for rotating duties. It's really important, especially in an organization, if you can. Now, some of small organizations might not be able to do this, and there's still some ways around it. But you want to rotate duties so people don't get comfortable in a certain position. And if you rotate them at infrequent times, that's even better, because they don't know when it's going to be, when we're going to do switch.
Yep,
you know?
Switch.
And if we switch, then somebody else can probably catch if they're doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. So what I recommend, like in organizations that are small and maybe you don't have the capital to have multiple employees, then maybe you'll have an outside person like me to kind of come in and just check over stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes that happens where you're able to catch the fraud that way. The U stands for unannounced audits or cash counts. And so kind of like the example that you gave with the church where the girl was borrowing the cash, you can, if you have an organization where you have petty cash, where you have cash on, because you have to go buy stamps or candy for the little small stuff that you don't want to write a check for, so you have cash on hand, have unannounced cash counts. Don't let them know when you're going to count the cash.
Right.
And so the cash needs to always balance to the receipts. And if you do that infrequently, it will lessen the likelihood that they will borrow from the cash.
You know what? On Sunday mornings, I have to be at work at 7 in the morning. So I get up at 4:30. I probably get out of the house by 5:30, sometimes 5:15 or whatever. And I stop by McDonald's for oatmeal. So this particular McDonald's I was stopping at, the kids were not even ringing the cash register. They were putting the money in their pocket. I saw them do it.
Wow.
And so I called the owner. I got the phone number, called the owner. I did this a couple of times. Got the phone number, called the owner. The owner never called me back. So I just left him a message that said what I witnessed, and that he really needed to be aware of what was going on overnight at his store. So probably maybe 2 months went by. I went back by there. He's there at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Because I know he had to know that I'm leaking money somewhere. What's happening?
Right. Your inventory is off.
Right. Totally, totally off. And here these kids are, they ringing stuff up, but not really.
Right.
No money was going in the cash register. So,
and that's a very common thing. And a lot, see, so you think McDonald's, that's small,
$5. Yeah.
But it happens in large organizations, too. I was studying this case where a lady was the property manager for an apartment complex.
Oh, my goodness.
And she had a tenant that always paid his rent in cash. So what she did was she took his apartment off the books and made it appear to be vacant.
Wow.
So every time he came in to pay his rent, she took the cash and never recorded it.
Wow. So. I mean, and you just think, people think all kinds of ways on how to do stuff. Like you said, opportunity.
Right.
Oh, they're going to figure it out.
They're looking at, and I say this in my book where I talk about, they watch what you watch, and they pay attention to the stuff that you're not paying attention to, and it's like, oh, they're not paying attention to that. And if you know, if they take it off the books and you notice it, then it's like, oh, my bad, that was a mistake.
Right.
I didn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay attention.
Unbelievable.
So back to the trust. So S stands for, this one is a big one, separate passwords and logins. This is so important. A lot of organizations have one password. Everybody shares it. You don't know who's been logging in. Bad idea. Don't do it. It doesn't cost much, if anything, for everyone to have their own logins. So you want to have separate passwords and logins so that you can see who's doing
what.
That's right. In the book, I talk about this story. There's this story about this guy, and this is a true story. He embezzled $8.5 million from a major corporation. He was the accounting manager, and he had accountants that worked under him.
Mm-hmm.
He knew their passwords because they had migrated over to this new system. He had all the passwords and logins. So he would log in as one of his staff members and create a check. Request.
Oh, my goodness.
Then he logged in as himself, and he approved the check. And he just did this. Like, at first, he did it to just get out of debt. His wife was pregnant, and he was just trying to get out of debt because she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And then it was so easy, he got to the point where he was stealing thousands of dollars a day.
He got greedy.
He embezzled $8.5 million.
That's crazy.
From not having separate passwords and logins, or not allowing employees to share passwords and logins. So that's really, really important.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And it's true. And it's true. He actually spoke, the guy who, the fraudster, we have a fraud conference every year. And to close out the conference, we have a convicted fraudster come and
tell
their story. And he was the closing speaker for one of the fraud conferences that I attended a couple of years ago.
Wow.
When he told his story.
I bet that was good.
They're all good, like all of the stories, because as anti-fraud professionals, we're listening to the stories and we're like, oh my gosh, you know, we're learning from them and the things that they think about and just how to educate our clients to be better at that. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yes, $8.5 million. He couldn't believe it. Well, now guess what? He's actually teaching ethics.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's his business. Absolutely. Who better to teach that?
Right. So he's teaching ethics for an accounting firm.
That's amazing.
So the last T in trust stands for training.
Mm-hmm.
And I think employers should really invest in fraud awareness training, because sometimes employees don't know what fraud looks like.
Yeah.
And so investing in that type of training and making sure that we support whistleblowers. Like, we live in an environment where whistleblowers are not supported.
Exactly.
Think about it. When we grew up, right, we said, don't be a tattletale.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be a snitch. Snitches get stitches, you know, things like that, right?
Yeah.
And so we have an environment where if you tell on someone, even if they're doing something bad, you end up being the bad person.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have to change that. And that happens with training and education. So those are some of the things that business owners, organization leaders, churches, nonprofits can do to control that opportunity piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The book, Did You Hire a Fraud? And you can go to didyouhireafraud.com to get that book, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Kindle reader, you can download it on Amazon.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's perfect. So if somebody wants to hire you as a forensic accountant or a tax accountant, which you do as well, tell folks how they can reach out.
So my company website is bythebookaccounting.com. You can go to the website and schedule a call with me, and we can just talk about your situation, find out if it's a really good fit for us, and we can go from there.
All right. Now, do you have a team, or do you do all of that work yourself?
I do have a team. So, have a team. I could not do
it. It's a lot. Like you said, you do the numbers. Like, I would be a great investigator. My family says you should have been a detective. But I'm sure that you have somebody who does the investigation part and, you know, whatever else there is needed in that teamwork on that project.
Yeah, it just depends on what it is that the client needs. Usually the client comes to us when something doesn't look right. Something doesn't look right. We need you to take a look. And
absolutely.
And then taking a look, and it's like, yeah, you're right. but it's kind of like with anything. Once they figure out that something doesn't look right, it's pretty certain.
Yeah. Yeah. If you feel like it, you know, go with your first one. That's usually right, right?
Yeah, that's usually the right thing to do.
Now, just one more question as an aside. What usually happens with fraudsters? Do they get prosecuted? Do they go to jail? I mean, what happens with them? I know most of them get fired. That's a gimme. But what happens beyond that?
It depends. So it really depends on the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times with churches especially, they don't prosecute.
Yeah.
They don't prosecute. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And so, but there are usually two options. So with my report, I don't make a recommendation on what they need to
do.
My report is just,
this is what it is. Yeah.
And all of that. And with my report, they can go to the police to get, to have the person arrested, or sometimes they may go to their attorney to maybe do some kind of an agreement where they'll pay the money
back. They have to pay the money back. I know $8.5 million ain't paying nothing back, but anyway.
So here's the thing. Like, most cases, if they're prosecuted and they go to jail, a part of their sentencing is restitution.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do some research on the percentage of restitution that's actually being repaid.
Right.
I would think that it's pretty low.
Think
about it. Once you go to prison and now you are a convicted felon,
you can't get a good job. How are you going to pay it back?
Right. Well, some people can.
Some people can go dig up some of that money that they hid in different places.
Some people have the ability to go and get another job.
Right.
It's the most amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But not most of us.
Yeah.
You know.
I got you. Yeah. Bernadette L. Harris, a phenomenal organization, and just giving us this great information. Forensic Accountant, Did You Hire a Fraud.com is where you need to go and check out that book. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.